LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, here we go, everyone. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, L. Duval of WorkingWithSpirits.com and the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, bringing us today's topic, plant magic. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Ark of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guest, L. Duval. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host, Reverend Ark. Take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. You know, if we're on the air, that means it's Monday yet again. So, don't forget, take a few moments, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, drop a comment on their Magic Mondays post, and get entered to win a free 15-minute reading with your favorite Hoodoo Psychic. As always, you'll find Reverend James there, you'll find myself, you'll find the amazing Miss Kat Ironwood, our good friend JD Hoodoo, who's here with us in chat today, and so many more. So, can't go wrong. Just go check it out. And seems like we just did this yesterday, didn't we, Reverend James? We're just on the air yesterday. Always,
maybe.
Always a fun time when we can join with our friends at the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour. You know, thank you and a shout out to Conjure Man for his very adept hosting of the show and Reverend John for joining us yesterday. That was a very good discussion and a very good show. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, folks, definitely go check it out in archive. It'll be posted at the Lucky Mojo Forum. And just a wonderful show all around. So, moving forward, very excited tonight. Making her radio debut, we are joined by the wonderful Miss Elle Duval, who is bringing us a topic we haven't talked about yet on the show. You know, we've had our time with some herbs. Now we're going to go into plant magic, and I can't wait to jump into the topic. But without further ado, let's bring Miss Elle on. How are you doing today, Elle?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing well. Kicking off the week in the best way possible with our Monday night family here on Mystics and Mages. So glad you could join us. I know we'd kind of been talking around about it over the course of a little bit here, and found the perfect time slot to bring you in. But since you are new to our friends, family, and listeners, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Let us know a little bit more about your practice, how you found your way into the magical world, so on and so forth.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well.
You know, little topics to start with.
Yeah, I think mine has been so strange, and I think my life is just a series of strange events anyhow, but something I'm not unfamiliar with, practice of magic and reading tarot cards and everything. I've been around this my entire life. My mother and my godmother both read cards, and both of them practice magic. They're like very well-rounded. I don't think that they have any kind of specific title. Well, my mother did. She's no longer here, but I've grown up around this. But I wasn't, I didn't really pay very much attention or say, you know what, I'm going to do this too. Actually, I went to culinary school. So had a whole different life path altogether, doing something different. And I ended up coming right back into this. My mother, when I had some things where I had to stay home when my son was born, so I had to be able to be home, to make money, to go back and everything. My mom said, you know, you need to read cards. That's what you need to do. You need to read cards. You need to finally do this. Our family, this is what we do. This is what you need to do. And I'm like, well, oh, okay. And it was so random how I met, how I came up to Lucky Mojo. And she's met everybody, and it just 1, 2, 3, everything came into it so easy. So that's how I found my way here. But plant magic in general, the topic that we're talking about tonight, is actually something more. My mother was a very avid gardener, and she mixed a lot of things. So it was so funny when I came into things and I was reading Kat's books and talking to people, I realized I grew up with a lot of these things, and I did not know what it was. But maybe my mother's the one that took this a little bit further. And I've just been putting 2 and 2 together ever since she passed away. I came to realize, like, oh, my gosh, that's why she did that. That makes so much sense now. So
isn't that funny how that happens? You know, as we grow up, you know, sometimes we look at these idiosyncrasies in our families, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, so that happened. And you don't really kind of take in the full, like, width and breadth of the meaning at the time. But
no.
as you grow older, and especially in the spiritual world, following, you know, growing your practice and branching out, exploring, understanding, you know, what's going on around us, you start looking back, and it's like, oh, wow, I totally missed on that. That myself, it was my great-grandmother. And sadly, she passed very early in my life, so I didn't really have a chance to explore with her. But I can relate completely to that experience.
I grew up in a house where we had a whole yard with just plants everywhere and different things that, again, come back to me. And I live in an apartment right now, and I've been taking some of what I remember with that and still using it here as well. Again, it really is. It's very strange, just things. And, you know, before we did this show today, I was thinking about something I had mentioned when you and I, when we had talked before about holly bushes. And my apartment has a walkway going into it. And they have bushes, but they're not holly bushes. And I happened to look down today, and there's a little holly bush that's growing next to the sidewalk. There's no holly bushes here whatsoever. I don't know where it came from. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that is so strange. It's almost like it just came into being, like, okay, well, there you go. That's what you need. You need that right there.
It almost reminds me, like, it's like that line from Jurassic Park, nature finds a way. You know, mm-hmm. Nature plus magic, it finds a way. It finds its way to us when we need it, where we need it. I kind of got goosebumps when you mentioned that just now. That's fantastic. So,
yes.
So you
definitely
do readings as well.
I better pay attention to. Mm-hmm.
I know we talked a little bit about this. Go ahead.
I'm available during the week. I don't have a full open schedule right now, but I still read during the week, you know. Mm-hmm.
And our good friend JD was definitely angling towards us doing a show on the Letterman cards, because you tend to prefer Letterman over the traditional tarot. Is that correct?
I'm still learning, and I just call it the Norman, so I know everybody has a way that they say it, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering that. but I generally prefer regular tarot since I use several decks at a time. However, it will depend on what kind of reading that I'm about to do. But since I'm still learning it, I don't always feel – well, I feel like tarot in general is always a learning experience. No matter how long you've been reading, really, it's always new to learn, some new connection to make, some new color that you notice, or, I didn't realize that combo was there. And I think with Norman's kind of like, we're just like the soft deck. It's like a mathematical equation. What kind of math are you doing today? It's different. That topic, I would love to jump into that one with you too. But I think I might prefer to stay a little bit on all of them. And I think John St. Germain has actually taught me something recently that I didn't realize, and that you can actually use Lenormand just like you would regular cards and ask them questions too. And I did not. I've inadvertently done that, but never realized, like, oh, you can actually use them this way too. Wow. Okay. That's different. I like that.
Me personally, I have not kind of delved into the world of Lenormand. And like you said, I don't know if I'm killing the how you say it either. I've heard Lenormand, I've heard Letterman. So it's mm-hmm. whatever comes out of my mouth at any given time. Oh, Troll T says Lenormand. Okay. I'll try to remember. And I know Reverend James also is very adept with the Lenormand cards. And I think that would be a very interesting show that we could put together. Reverend James, we may be on tap for Reading Palooza Part 2.
Sounds fun to me.
Yeah, that would be very interesting in general, because, again, it's always a learning experience, no matter how much you go into it. I just think it's interesting. Everybody has a little bit of a different flavor to bring to it. So.
Yeah, I think that's what some of our listeners like, and what I personally like about doing readings on the air, and especially our Reading Palooza days where we kind of just do readings all the whole show. You get different ways that people read, and you see what different people focus on and different cards. And then sometimes we have people in the chat who like to do their own readings and share them with us, so we get to all kind of share, and that's kind of neat.
So So it becomes it's a reading day and a learning day and like a reading sharing day. It's just a lot of fun. And hopefully we can book one of those sometime soon. And I will put this out very early on. Ms. L, you are more than welcome to join us. One thing awesome. I did have a question about, because it seems to me that the Lenormand is a lot more blunt than the more ephemeral when you get into like Oracle cards and to an extent Tarot. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. I mean, they are blunt. But again, I think it's kind of, like I've noticed with Tarot, you can be very much more detailed if you use multiple decks. And sometimes I find that some are better at delivering a very blunt message. But with the Lenormand, I think there's so many angles you can read it from, like so many different tactics, like houses and knighting and, you know, where are these cards? Where are you in this whole entire spread? It can be, if you break it down, I think it actually can be just as detailed, if not more sometimes.
I'm personally a fan of that aspect, you know, that blunt, this is what it is sort of a thing. Sometimes messages just need to be heard. But, you know, and this is one thing that I know when we were talking last week, you mentioned about how you use multiple decks in conjunction and I find this very fascinating. Would you be able to share a little bit more about your process on that?
Again, so I collect decks, and it seems like every time I come up to a question or something that somebody's trying to ask me, and my brain is trying to deliver the message properly. And I feel like I'm missing pieces. And for some reason, I always find another deck that fills that need, whatever it is, whether it's an Oracle deck or just a different type of tarot deck that has extra cards, whatever the case is. And then I'm able the next time to pull this deck in. Like I'll use two general tarot decks and maybe a specific Oracle deck. And it will give me more details if I'm asking for clarity behind one specific card. Let's say, you know, the Five of Pentacles might pop up in a reading, and I'm looking at the surrounding cards, and I could see, okay, well, let's get into detail about what this is going to be. So I'll pull from an Oracle deck to really get into the you know, what is it exactly? Well, it's about energy. Oh no, it's about a secret that needs to be revealed. And then another tarot deck will help me to just break that down even further. So it's really about very, very specific details. And again, it really kind of depends on who I'm reading with, what kind of decks I have out that day. They'll always work together, whichever ones that I have. And they're always very different types of decks. Like I said, I really do collect a lot of different kinds. And I love ones that have unique cards to them. Like I have this one that has a regular tarot deck, and it has a card called the Morning, and then it has the Night. And this one can also be pulled upright and reverse, so it really adds something when this card comes out about the person I'm reading for. So it just gives me more to give to them. And I don't really feel satisfied in reading unless I feel like they've had their all their questions answered, that they're walking away, even if what they wanted to know didn't come out to be quite what it was, they're walking away with a lot of information to take with them. So
I just wanted to double check that I understand what you're saying, Elle, is like, I think you used the example two tarot decks and an Oracle deck.
Mm-hmm.
So yes. Let's say like, somebody came to you on a question for love, and let's say like you flipped a card and it was the King of Wands and you wanted more detail on that, that the following decks would reflect what that first card is as more details about that focus?
So, like, let's say that their question was asking about the new guy that they're seeing, and the guy came up as the King of Wands. Since, in general, like, if you're just looking at this as, okay, well, this is the King of Wands, so this guy can obviously, you know, maybe he's a fire sign, maybe he's very passionate, maybe he is a very dominant person. I can break this down even further with different cards from the Oracle deck. Well, this guy also, he really does talk a lot, but maybe he also has a tendency to talk over other people. And based off of, like, if I pull, like, my Oracle deck right here, this one card keeps popping out at me. It's a victim mentality card. So, well, he likes to talk over other people and make you feel like you're the one in the wrong. So that's a negative thing that popped up kind of right away, but maybe with another tarot deck, I might pull, you know, another card or two and say, okay, well, he does that because he wants to rebalance the situation. Oh, this guy might be kind of narcissistic. You see, he didn't pop up as King of Wands reverse, but he popped up. He's not a bad guy, but he has a weird side.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting. I might have to dabble with that method. That's kind of neat.
And it goes very into detail with this person. So now when the next time when I read for them, they're not just going to say, oh, yeah, he was definitely pushy. He pushed me right away. Well, I mean, I gave you the details to see that he was going to do that. So now you know.
Forewarned was forearmed.
Yeah, I agree.
And actually, JD has a question for us. Do you ever use other styles in a reading at the same time for clarity? I think he means other modalities, like mediumship or pendulum. Correct me if I'm wrong, JD.
Do you use other tools? Sorry, you were saying correct me if you're wrong.
No, I told JD, I said, correct me if I'm wrong. Yep, other tools. There we go.
Oh, okay. Well, I am learning about dice right now. I don't generally use them in public readings at the moment because I'm still learning about them. But yes, I do have a pendulum. I have a few different of those too, a pendulum. And also, let's see, what else do I have over here that I tend to use? I have cowrie shells. I don't really pull them out very often, though. I do have those over here. And then I have, these aren't runes, but they're like answering stones, I guess you could say. They have yes, no, maybe, almost like a pendulum, but you can kind of toss them the same way. There's lots of different things that are written on them. I found them in a shop here. And they were on crystals, almost like a set of runes. It was very pretty, but there's only like 10 in the bag. But sometimes I use those too. So yes and no. Sometimes I don't use tools at all. My mother was a big proponent on, say, the first thing that comes to your mind, and I learned later that that's supposed to be called claircognizance, because you automatically know what to say, and you stick with it, and that's what comes out of your mouth. That's what it's supposed to be. I actually try to rely on that one a lot more. That's been a very strange one. I think actually that one tends to be the best. For example, okay, I did a reading 2 weeks ago, and the Ten of Pentacles popped out for this woman. And the first thing that popped into my head was the house on the hill, because in this deck there's a house on the hill, but it's just the way that the card was named to me, and I said that in the reading, and she's like, oh, that's what we call our house. Like, we legitimately have a sign outside that says the house on the hill. So I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. There we go. And I think that there was something there that they were considering selling it or doing some kind of a either selling it or renovating it. They weren't really sure, especially right now with everything. So it was very relevant. But I stick with things like that. And then I think that makes them feel more comfortable too. But just certain things will pop up. And I like this kind of tool the best. So
many readers, they utilize the tools, and they do so with such an adept nature, and they're just so good at it, but they don't lean into their abilities with, I just call them the clairs, you know, when you got clairaudience, mm-hmm. claircognizance, clairsentience, all of them, you know, they don't really lean into that. So it's actually really kind of refreshing to hear that you definitely lean into the use of the claircognizance with readings. That's so awesome. So I do have a question. And
yeah.
As a card collector, mm-hmm. do you have a favorite deck?
Oh my gosh, yes. I have two. And I love these decks. One of them was probably a little bit more expensive than I'm comfortable with buying. However, they have a new deck. One of them is called the Black Deck. And let me grab it from my... it's called the True Black Tarot. That's what's called the True Black Deck. And this deck is so, so pretty. The card stock is amazing. I'm seeing it online for, like, Amazon for $25, but I think I paid, like, $90 for this. Amazing. It's black and white, and I think even Nakashiva knows, like, I like the black and white decks very, very much. It's such a beautiful deck, and the artwork is great. And there's an extra card in the deck as well. I'm trying to think of what it was. It generally means infinity, like continuing over and over again. The other one that I have is the Santa Muerte Tarot, and it's by the artist Fabio Pastrani, I think it was his name. I think that's his name. I can't read in this light. I'm so sorry. I know his first name is Fabio. But I really like this deck as well. I have it as a screensaver on my phone. I was gifted this deck from a friend of mine, and I've just been in love with it the entire time. It's such a pretty deck, and I'm normally not a very big skeleton or you know, just, I don't know. The deck is beautiful. The cardstock is beautiful. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I cannot read what his last name was. But those are my absolute two favorite tarot decks. But the True Black Tarot, they have a new one. That's what I was saying. They have the white deck, and I have not had my hands on it, but I will absolutely be getting that deck. It is also so pretty.
So I know you'd mentioned them to Reverend James and I previously, and they may or may not already be on order. it was kind of funny talking about being card collectors or deck collectors, I should say. As our regular listeners know, Reverend James and I have been in the process, a 2-year process now, of moving from the north to the south and combining houses. Well, in the process, we actually just stumbled across another drawer that we had kind of forgotten were full of card decks. So now we're kind of like revisiting reacclimating to this whole drawer that we totally forgot that we had. We may be a little card crazy. What can you say? But, you know, I think we are at a very good spot to pause for a moment for our regular daily announcements here. One thing I do want to share for everybody listening, you can catch Miss L. Duval at www.workingwithspirits.com page. Absolutely fantastic page. You can also catch her on the readersandrootworkers.org site under the Psychic Readers and Conjure Doctors. Definitely take a moment and look her up. And Reverend James, let's hit those announcements.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurement, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Tuesdays 4 to 5, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay in syndication, Thursdays. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. And now let's move on into our topic for today. You know, when you think about plants in magic and magical workings, you know, I would have to say most people's minds immediately go to the herbs and the roots and things like that. Very few really take into consideration, I think, in the grand scheme of things, about plants themselves, the whole plant, and incorporating that in their magical practices. So it's one of the reasons why I'm so excited for this show. I'm going to let you just take it away, Elle, and let's talk plant magic.
Okay, well, let's talk plant magic. So we know that, I've seen a lot of people talk about, well, you can use your potted plants for either disposing of work or, you know, setting your work there for the plant to continue. Like, you can bury your honey jars at the base of the tree, or you can take the remains and bury them in the water or take them to the graveyard. That would be disposing of them in some way. But you can do the same with plants. However, using live plants, this is generally not disposing, but more keeping a work going, because you're really using the energy of the plant to continue putting energy into the work. So it's a very long-term work. It's not something, it would be similar to a honey jar, something that you don't really want to necessarily stop, or you really want it to just continue. I find sometimes with some works, you want them to either be continuous, or you want to be a slow and steady type of energy that's going around the work.
Right.
So you might commonly think of like plants for your money altar. Like, that would be something that would be a good one to keep on there and just continue. You'll continuously have a steady working right there that's continuously emitting a type of energy, and you can continuously feed it. Now you're adding something live as well to your money altar. And you can tie that to you directly. You can tie that to your money altar. You can, you know, add different things into your plant as well when you're watering it to help maybe speed things up, or, you know, add a little bit of a gambling type luck. There's a lot of different ones. So there's plants outside, driveway, by your front door, your back door, or in your garden, and there's also plants that you bring in your house. Have them in your windowsill, just have them sitting on your table, or, again, on an actual working altar, too. So there's lots of different areas that these can actually be used in. It doesn't have to be just a, disposing or deploying. Yeah. So
right.
Different things. I do always use for disposing of works. I'm very careful, though, at the same time with disposing of works, and I actually wanted to point that out, too, about planting. So a lot of us use candles, and that's not the only way to do work, but a lot of us use candles. But what kind of candle wax you have is actually very important, too, because like paraffin wax does not break down very easy in soil. It generally can take a very long time. So if you are planning on disposing of candle wax remains, try to go with a different type of blend.
You mean more along the lines of like a beeswax or soy wax?
Yeah, those can take a few weeks, maybe 2 or 3 months at the most, and they'll break down. With a lot of candles. From what I've read, it's not actually harmful still, even with the chemicals in it, but it just takes a very long time. So if you're putting it in a potted plant, you're like, you know, I'm going to do all my blood stuff all at the base of this rose bush. It's not really going to go anywhere for a long time if you're using make sure that you're using something that's going to actually break up the soil and go away.
Okay, we just had a couple people in the chat mention. Seemed like we, yeah, the voice kind of fluctuated a little bit, but still able to hear you.
I can hear you better now.
That's actually one thing I find, you know, I never really considered the wax itself and the properties of the wax when going about deployment or disposal. It has me going, being very introspective right now. I'm like cataloging back. It's like, okay, when did I last do this? When did I last do that? Should I go check? Should I change things up? It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know we mentioned a little bit in the first segment of the show, we talked about the little holly plant that you saw as you were walking into your apartment building. You know, can we share that story that you shared with Reverend James and myself about the holly plant? I give that a little bit more context for the listeners, and yet again, another aspect of plant magic.
Yeah, so the holly bush that I was referring to is something my grandmother had, a holly bush in her driveway growing up. She actually had a few of them, although I think over the years between my mother and my grandmother, they kept running them over, so there was only really one that survived. and that might have also been another reason that they planted them right there, but anybody that was coming in and out or would visit would have to walk through those holly bushes to go. And I remember my grandmother talking about that, well, if they're not meant to be here, well, they're going to get messed up coming into the house. But they're going to get messed up coming up, because that's just how you had to come onto the property. That was it. So they were there. And holly bushes are also protective. You can use them as a way of keeping people that shouldn't be on your property away. They do have sharp, guardian bushes. They do have sharp little plant leaves. So when I see them, I see them, they're very common here to see them. I just haven't seen them outside of my apartment complex. It's so strange that one just popped up there. But it's there, and you have to walk right by it. And I'm pretty sure they'll probably end up leaving it, because there's a space there now from where, I don't know why, but half that bush is ruined. So now people are going to have to walk by that same holly bush as it gets bigger. But, yeah, they're still there. Well, there's one that's still there anyhow. All the rest, like I said, the rest of them have probably been ran over plenty of times.
That's one thing I really find interesting.
We have a holly bush that popped up right next to our driveway, the first driveway that we have. We have two driveways because it circles behind the house and to the other side. And there's a little holly bush down next to a tree. So I find that interesting. It makes me wonder if it was put there intentionally.
It could happen. I mean, I think that that's something down here that a lot of our family members have planted, and maybe they all have the same. Because, you know, they'll call it a lot of superstitious type things now, but they use the same things, like having the brooms and don't take your broom, your old broom, to your new house. That's something
right.
That's common here. Or putting salt on your steps. That's also very common here. So these kind of things, I think that's one of them. It's just a lot of the younger generation, or even from we remember a lot of things from my generation, but it's not as common now. I think it was something that they knew growing up, so it's not odd to me to see it, but it's weird to put two and two together sometimes. But I do think that they were planted there, because why else would you really need holly bushes? I mean, if they get you, that's terrible. Like, they hurt. I don't know if you've ever fallen on one, but it's awful. Yeah, like, even the bark is treacherous. Like, it really hurts. So,
actually, it's one thing I find very interesting about the holly bush is we were talking about, you know, it is a protective plant from a magical standpoint. And, you know, we talked about the spiky leaves and such. But a lot of people don't realize that a holly bush doesn't start with those spiky leaves. It's only once the plant has been, I guess you can say, attacked in some way, whether that's wildlife eating it or, you know, human intervention. But it actually, once it's been quote unquote attacked, it starts to sprout those spikes on the leaves, the pointy ends of those leaves. So if you have a spiky leafed, I'll just toss it out there like Lenormand. You know, this plant's learned to protect itself. So you have that extra, this plant is definitely on guard. I don't know, just little plant information.
Yes, but I didn't know that, actually. That's very interesting. I did not know that at all. Now that just tells me that the one that's outside is so small. I mean, it's only it's so small. I've never noticed it, but it's got the pointy leaves all over it. Somebody has already went after it. That's awful.
Yeah, if you ever look at a large holly bush, sometimes there are where it's just starting to turn. We actually have some near our power plant here, and they have these really big holly bushes out front, and you can see towards the bottom, or at the top, all of the leaves are kind of oval-shaped. But towards the bottom, where the deer can reach, they're starting to sprout these spiky leaves. I didn't know it either until we just happened upon that one day.
Oh, that's strange. Well, I mean, I guess it is a kind of an interactive plant. That's really, really crazy.
Nature finds a way.
On their appreciation. Yeah. But again, it's a type of protection. It's not really a potted plant, although I think it is one of those plants. If you have a big enough pot, you probably could put it in. It's just not going to grow very big. But at the same time too, there's a lot of different other things that you can do. A friend that I was talking to the other day, we were actually talking about ferns and how, where he's from, cause he lives in New Orleans. That's actually really common, that everybody has ferns on their front porch. And I've here we generally will have, or we have the holly bushes outside, but I think it's more common for like pothos and things like that to be just right on the inside or outside. But having the ferns, I was like, oh yeah, there are ferns. And I was reading about the ferns because that wasn't, well, I know that they're also technically supposed to be a type of protective plant. I wasn't really very sure about why. I've never used them myself in that way. But come to find out that they're supposed to stop burglars, people from breaking in your house. And I just thought that that was really, really interesting too. And so, okay, so maybe down in New Orleans, that's something that, you know, that's more common for them. I don't know, you know, about holly bushes, but they have ferns. Everybody has ferns on the front porch. So it's also a very easy plant too. Yeah, isn't that, that's very interesting, have the ferns. Did you know that that was a thing with the burglars? And having them, like, so you're keeping burglars out, incidentally. I imagine if you were to water those, and so when I water any of my plants, if I want to add a magical oil to it, I do not add very much to the watering mix. I'll add, like, 3 drops to an entire can, just because I don't really want to mix too many things that are damaging to the plant. But I would imagine you could add any type of protective-type oil or wash, right to your ferns or your holly for protection, and have that all, again. So now you're kind of increasing those type of protective energies around your home. So, and maybe even on that note, why not plant, what are they, the Indian nickels? What do they call, buffalo nickels? Because I think those are supposed to be a way of technically having an alert if somebody is crossing your boundaries. That's supposed to be, oh my gosh, what is it called? Some type of psychic alert. Like you're supposed to sit up and be like, oh, something bad is happening. Like you get that feeling when you add buffalo nickels. So I imagine you could probably, you know, throw one down on the ground right there too and have the same thing. Like an inner alarm to me. Somebody taught me that about the real
I have heard of the buffalo nickel. But the one that I usually think of whenever I think of that is the Indian head pennies, because they're the scouts.
There you go.
That look out. That's what I just sit here and think of Miss Cat talking about.
Yeah, because I know when you put railroad ties in the corners for protection, when you use those kind of things, which you could actually do those in potted plants too, apparently, in the four corners of your home if you're in an apartment and still get the same type of benefit from those. But, you know, if you plant that with it, like on top of the railroad tie, that's supposed to give you your alarm, your inner alarm, so that you know when something is crossing that's not supposed to be there. So.
See, I'm finding this all fascinating. I've learned, now I want to go buy ferns for the porch. and, you know, I've often, I've seen the images and of the grand porches that have the ferns all along them, and that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, just even just thinking about, you know, in like the Hoodoo Urban Root Magic book, Miss Cat's Hoodoo Urban Root Magic book, you know, ferns are something that you include in your workings for protection and jinx breaking and things of that nature. It really, and then to couple that with New Orleans and, you know, the potential of people throwing at each other, it really kind of brings a lot of things together for me.
Yeah, I think these are, you know, things we've seen that are kind of common, and you just never really paid really close attention to the why. It's just you've seen them and they're there. But there's also plants that are indoors that people will have, and you never really pay much attention to it either. Like when people have aloe vera plants on the inside, and a lot of people will keep aloe vera plants because they're very easy to maintain. They're low light plants. They don't really require a lot of work. But, and I know you can use dried aloe and different types of workings. That's not quite for this, but on the inside, like if you have one, they're really good with healing. But I mean, you can actually use them physically for healing if you get burned on your oven, which I have one right next to my stove specifically for that reason, because I do burn myself all the time. Let's not forget that I have a culinary degree. That does not exempt me from getting hurt. But, you know, it's also good in healing. It's supposed to aloe vera itself. My mother loved having aloe vera everywhere. It's supposed to be a plant that radiates a positive type healing energy in general. They're also a type of air cleaner, which I have a lot of plants that are, what do you call them, like air filter plants. Like they actually filter
right.
air in your home to provide. So I love plants like this, but they're all about good healing energy. So having them and having them around an area like that is supposed to keep you from doing, I guess, more. But I will say, you know, I have been burned and I have used it quite often. But I like to think that it does. I don't actually feed that one any type of healing oils, just because that one probably gets a little bit less light than any of the other plants in my apartment. But I still think of it in that way when it's there. I put it there for, you know, it's healing type energy reasons. Just the same thing, too, when you would have people that have, like, peace lilies in their home. You know, this is another plant that you can actually feed this one too. It's another air clean type plant, but it is meant, just like it says, peace lily, it's meant to bring peace and tranquility. And that plant itself has a really interesting history. I went to go look that one up because I remember there was something else about peace lilies that I couldn't quite remember. But they have it is an air purifying plant. These are meant to absorb negative energy, not just promote positive energy or promote peace. They absorb negativity. And there is a big thing about if the plant starts to die, pay attention. Because obviously it's absorbing more than it can handle. So if you have a dead plant, then you really need to get on some uncrusting, get rid of somebody in your life. It's kind of your warning plant right there. So it's a good one to have, but it is a very good one to keep to, keep people that come over when you want to have a visitor or company, to keep everything nice and cool. And you can even feed it some tranquility oil. Just, you know, not very much.
And one of the things that I find that I really kind of outstanding about this whole, this discussion is, really, we're kind of you're laying out a whole additional way that it's very, very much at the fingertips of for everyone to be able to do, you know. So often you'll have somebody with, you know, you're working a sweetening jar, or, you know, burning a candle, doing some sort of a candle working for peaceful home. And, you know, it works, and that you're just constantly working that honey jar, sweet jar, so on and so forth. But this can provide tangible benefits using a peace lily in much the same way. And really kind of, it just provides that energy that you're seeking without really, it's almost like effortless work. It would seem, as long as you're taking care of it, it will take care of you.
Yeah. Same thing with your lodestones. When you're consistently feeding your lodestone, you can do that. But just like I said, that peacefully, that's one of the only ones that I've ever seen that really is like its own alarm system about bad energy. But when it absorbs too much, it will start dying. So they're incredibly easy to take care of. So if it's dying, it's definitely meaning something. They don't even require that much light. But this is also something that you can gift to somebody else too. So
excellent.
If you are fighting with somebody, okay, and you really, you know, you want to get back on good terms with them, and let's say you do some kind of, you know, reconciliation work to be good with them again, or maybe even to cool things off a little bit. I mean, you can easily take the petition from the work or even a little bit of the old person, and you have a direct gift that you've given to them, a working that you've given to them. And as that plant's growing in their house, it's kind of eating away at the same thing. Any negativity that's came up between the two of you, it's taking care of it for you. So it's a very low
on the mundane
type
level
of them.
Too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, people do
you know,
everything.
Because if they don't take care of the plant.
Yeah. And peace lilies are very easy. They really are kind of difficult to kill. But on that same note, gifting plants, I mean, there's also, I've only really heard of one that you can gift away and technically harm somebody, but there are, you know, like a snake plant, which in itself, I have a snake plant too, and I don't use it for any, but I've actually heard that that is something you can do. You can gift a snake plant. In my home, it's an air cleaner, but it's also another thing that's, it is kind of protective, actually. I think in some Asian cultures, it's because the shape of it, it's like swords or snakes. It is meant to kind of keep bad things away, but you can gift it in the same way with some pretty negative things in it if you want to harm somebody, and it will bring a lot of terrible things to their home if you're putting any type of destruction or crossing oil in that. It droops down bad. The leaves need to start turning, though. You'll see them start turning brown, and that doesn't happen. That will happen very quickly when you come across somebody. And I'm sorry, I just seen that message in the chat. Yeah, you can gift a snake plant with some type of curse work buried in it or in it, and really mess up the energy in a person's house very quickly, and they won't have any idea. They're going to think, you know, oh, this is definitely my friend here. They gave me a plant. This is great. I don't have to do nothing to take care of this plant. So easy. I don't know why my life's a mess.
And we're just sitting there with a cup of tea.
Yeah, letting the work do itself. There's nothing there for you to do except just wait. So you have, you know, getting plants, it's pretty easy to get certain plants. I mean, it just kind of depends. It's something that you're really, it's a work that you're giving to somebody else. And since they're accepting it, I really feel like they're taking it a lot easier than it would be with some works. I mean, I always like to do candle work in conjunction with it to make it much more solid, but now they've really just taken something in their house. It's the same as like giving them some type of gift and rubbing, you know, an oil or spray all over it beforehand. But this one is a living gift. It's not, it's there. There's gifting things. And then there's, again, so right now I have a lot more indoor type things. But we do have outdoor things like basil, but more indoor potted plants, because I think that these are, especially with us going into winter, or fall and winter, these are easier to keep, and they really change the energy within our home. I know I talked about the bamboo plant in folder book that we have. Is there any sweet plants like flowers you can gift to curse, like double crossing? Well, the only one I know of is the snake plant that I've really thought of using. That's something I'm going to consider a little bit more of about sweet plants. I'll have to think about that one. That's definitely something I'll come back with for that one. But anyhow, so the bamboo plant is one that I mentioned in her book about a way to kind of grow your own confidence, a way to kind of grow your own strength for yourself. But bamboo plant is another one that you can put on your money altar, and depending on how many sticks of or stalks of bamboo, you know, it can mean different things. But I've always liked this one because bamboo is a very strong one. I'm sorry?
Very intrigued. No, I'm very intrigued right now.
The red folder. Mm-hmm. But how I use it, and I still actually have one in here, but I wrapped some of my hair in the roots. And so I talk to the plant. It's on my vanity so that when I'm getting ready, it's almost like it gives me a lot of confidence. The stronger this is, the stronger I am with myself. So I've kind of tied myself to that plant, though, by putting my hair in its roots and letting it grow. And if you do that with any of these plants, you need to be very careful to make sure that you keep them alive, because just like if you have something on your money altar as well that you're really tying yourself very closely into, take care of it. Don't, you don't really want to just let that die or go bad. If you want to, you know, take the work apart and take it apart, but don't let it die. That's just a terrible way of disposing of that kind of work. And, you know, a live plant is just bad. Doesn't be very bad luck. But the bamboo on your altar is another living plant thing that a lot of people actually have, and they don't really realize that they're doing it, but that's plant magic right there too, the bamboo.
I'm always fascinated by the designs that the bamboo plants can come into with the different like interlacing networks. I've sat there, I think there was a pallet of them at Home Depot a few years back, and I just kind of sat there staring at this display, all the different styles that they had, and I'm like, how many different ways that this could be utilized. I will say to Dr.
Yeah.
Sweet's comment though, that about bamboo being almost like a curse, because we do have it growing in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's slowly taking over its little corner. I shouldn't say slowly anymore, because it literally, it'll pop through the ground one day, and the next day it'll be about 12 foot tall.
Oh, wow.
It's insane the way this bamboo is growing, but it's I feel a little bit better about it now.
Wow. I see. Well, it doesn't, I haven't seen it. I have seen it actually on the road here. As a matter of fact, I didn't think it really did grow, but I guess it does. But I mean, this would be like having a couple little stalks and some pebbles, you know, in your house.
Right.
It's not quite the same as growing outside. So if you're, you know, tying 5 stalks together or 21 stalks together, then you've got a much more measured way of how many, you know, what the symbolism is behind the numbers. So, but I imagine outside it really is just kind of its own thing. It's its own entity at that point, sounds like. Actually sounds more like kudzu than anything else, if it's really difficult to get rid of.
The kudzu is a whole nother story.
Yeah.
I've never seen a plant that you can almost seriously physically watch it grow. I was at a house, they cut the grass, they cut the kudzu back, it grew literally a foot in roughly about 2 hours and just reached right back out into the yard. I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff is insane. But that's a whole nother story. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that one's actually going to go in with the list too of things that could be really just kind of throw a little seedling in somebody's yard or even a cutting and watch it take over.
And it does. It reroots just as it goes. So wherever it touches the soil again at a joint, it continues to grow. It's very entangling. I'll throw that out there. Very binding as another option. Here in Western North Carolina, I've found some very interesting uses for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've known how to use that one too. I don't remember who it was. I heard that they were trading some kudzu for something else from Florida, but there was I heard somebody else like, oh, okay, you're definitely wrapping somebody up here, because they wanted a lot of it, a lot of the vine, and they wanted it to be like a fresh vine, so it would wrap and wrap and wrap and wrap and wrap. But yeah, that's what I'm gonna actually take note of that one, because I'm going to probably use that one later. I'm gonna make sure I get that one.
I think it would also be really good for making a powder for money stay with me kind of working, because mm-hmm. the roots can be dried and ground and used as a type of starch. So it would be very much like cornstarch.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'm going to collect some of this. I'm growing right across the road, so I'm going to definitely grab quite a lot of that. Speaking of which, actually, that brings me to something I was thinking about earlier, and I've never tried this, but I have seen people, or I have seen this online. So I know that there's other kinds of plants. So we have, like, pretty common house plants. But there was another plant that a lot of people, if they want to kind of work on their marriage or maybe even get a proposal, they want to maybe practice this kind of thing, you know, red clover grows in the wild, but it can absolutely be put in a potted plant and it can be brought inside. It does not do well in a lot of shaded light, but you can keep it inside so long as it does get about, I think, 4 hours of direct light. So this is another thing that you can use. Put your, you know, you have a commitment type work or a marriage type work. This is another one, and you want it to continue on rather than doing work after work after work. You can reinforce the same work by getting that red clover plant and having that in your house. You can even build an entire altar around it with that plant in the window. With that red clover, because it does do well in potted plants. Part of the
I did not know that.
Yeah, the plant society I have, I'm a part of, has a has somebody mentioning it on there. They're actually very good at hibiscus, and for some reason I cannot keep hibiscus, which is another one that you can actually keep. It just doesn't do well inside. So,
you know,
a lot of these, a big one.
I would never have honestly thought that it would survive inside. I'm so used to seeing it, you know, along the roadsides, along the hillsides, you know, in the fields. Never would have considered it being convertible to a house plant. And the magical uses of that, that is exceptionally wonderful. You're giving me a whole new way of thinking about plants now. And although we have cats that tend to like to, which is a whole problem in and of itself. It's really kind of got me focusing on a little bit more of, you know, really, where can we take this? You know, I'm used to my herbs. I'll admit I'm that kind of old schoolish from that aspect where, you know, I'm used to having my dried herbs, the herbs that I use in workings and everything. I did in recent years branch out into planting a lot of these herbs as regular decorative plants around the house, rosemary and basil, two of the primary ones that, you know, I try to make sure that I always have. But to really, really incorporate plant magic into one's magical practices, it seems exponentially energetic.
You can also grow them just for that reason too, though, like having the little window seal of herbs with, like, you know, thyme and oregano and just the little herbs that you might have there. And, you know, feeding some money oil in there, some luck. And so it's producing luck, but you can also harvest it and actually use it in your work as well. Advice to give to people that want to start working with live plants, start with common house plants. Like the peace lily is a really good one. I think that's probably my favorite. That one and pothos. I absolutely love pothos. And I learned something really strange about pothos too. And I did not know this, but did you know that pothos have been trying to die for some 50 years right now, that they used to actually flower, and now, for some reason, we continue to collect cuttings of a pothos or something. And so all the pothos that we have now are just cuttings, and they don't flower anymore. They don't produce, so we're just replicating them. But for
I had no idea.
It's since I think it was 1952 is the last one that they've seen flower. And that's so strange to me. But they're the easiest thing to take a cutting of and regrow. They're so, so simple.
You know, we've mentioned pothos a couple times. What is its benefits?
It's another one that can dispose of negative energy and just kind of it's an air purifier as well. It's, I mean, obviously, it's a very beautiful plant. I don't think it absorbs negative energy the way that the peace lily does, because it will have leaves that tend to fall off and die all the time, but I do know that it's meant to be kind of like a circular thing, like it will remove negative type things and add positivity. So it's not really a working plant that you'll put for like money or for anything specific for me, but it is one of those that just keep good energy around you. So if you're really focused on luck or success, it's a good one to keep, because you want to keep your energy very positive. You want to remove anything bad around you. But I have seen, I went online to see this about people hanging the pothos near their front door, and it's meant to kind of sweep the bad luck away when you go in the house. Like a hanging pothos is meant to clear the bad luck away before you enter or when you come in. So it's I guess it can absorb bad luck specifically. She just said that her pothos is the only thing that's surviving. I'm telling you though, because they're easy to keep alive. So, for a work desk or secret altar, it would depend on what kind of magical plants. What type of altar is it to have on there? I'm sorry, I'm reading the comments too every now and then.
It's perfectly fine. Because now I'm thinking back once upon a time in probably one of my dumbest employment moves. I was working in a cubicle, and it was a very toxic sort of a situation. And one day I happened to be walking through the store and I saw a pothos plant, and I took it and I'm like, you know what? This is the perfect size for my desk. I took it to work and had it sitting, you know, it got just enough light from the windows in the building, and I never had a problem after that. And then I literally just now, this just clicked, and it's been almost 20 years since that happened. Okay. I'm about to go buy me some pothos now.
Yeah, it's going to be a cutting of somebody else's pothos, though. That's just still, that was the weirdest thing I think I found all week about. So to answer that question, she was talking about a money altar. I would still stick with bamboo. They're very easy to take care of. It's just people generally tend to take too much care of them. Like they overwater them. And whatever pot you get the bamboo in, you take it out of and you put it in some pebbles and put a little water at the bottom. The roots don't like to be in soil. They like pebbles.
What do you think about?
It's very great for a money altar.
What do you think about money trees?
I like money trees. I have a very small altar space for my money altar. So I'll generally stick to smaller things. However, I will say this. Where I lived before, I had marigolds that grew outside, and I would often take marigolds to put on my altar as kind of a living flower, not to grow on my altar, but I would bring them in. Folds was another one that's, it's good with quartz stuff, obviously, but the nickname is like Mary's Gold, so it is meant to, it's a luck I think, too. It looks like a coin, so it's very pretty. I think I read somewhere that they used to use this to cure depression, too, a tea from marigold. So, but it's a good luck type thing. So if you want, this is also something you can add fresh flowers to your altar as well.
That kind of brings to mind calendula. Along the same lines as the marigold, you know, the blooms look like coins. It's got its magical uses. One thing I will say over it, that as opposed to marigolds, the calendula doesn't have kind of a scent. Like the marigold has, most marigolds I've ever been exposed to, they kind of have a very distinctive scent. And if you're in an office, that might become a bone of contention with coworkers.
That's true. But if you're bringing in fresh cut flowers, though, I mean, I would think.
But a calendula plant might also be a potential work money plant.
Yeah. I mean, for that matter, basil is actually, you can use basil and money works too. And it's also incredibly easy to grow. Although it's not. You can grow it inside. It's just the fact that it grows like 5 feet tall that, you know, can be kind of difficult for an altar. But basil is one of those you can bring in some fresh leaves and put them. That would generally be something more I would use in lines of cooking, though, or just harvesting the leaves to use some type of luck work. But if you have a garden that you're using and you're wanting to, you know, if you're using for outdoor types of work, I would say planting basil around might be very good for, well, any number of reasons, really. Basil is kind of one of those things you can use on a lot of different type of, I love it in money works, but I've used it also in protection and love, in love works, success. So Mary should also be added, though, if you're going to have a garden.
You know, one of my go-tos, really, I would have to say, and this is something I've had marginal success in actually getting to stick around, is lavender.
Oh, really? I love lavender. That's I haven't had a problem with that one. I don't know why. For some reason, I think some plants like to be, you know, you have to be very particular with them, which. Orchids are probably one of my least favorite plants because I feel like they're very persnickety, and they say they don't really require a lot of care, but I really think that they do. You have to leave them alone, but the moment you miss a watering within hours, it's throwing off every flower it has. So orchids, great. If you have luck with them, I don't, but it's another one you can use indoors. So, you know, for me, lavender is an easier one. And actually, I harvested so much lavender from my garden. I still have a few pounds of it that I grew. So it was one of my favorite ones.
See, Phyllis made a comment in the chat about coming up to come get some of her lavender. It's going crazy. Phyllis is up in Pennsylvania. When I lived in Pennsylvania, I had no problem growing lavender. I'd buy a plant in a little 6-inch pot. By the end of summer, it was about 4 or 5 foot tall and wide. I have not been able to get it to go for me down here in North Carolina yet.
I don't know. Where I'm at, we have a lot of red clay. So all of my lavender was outside, and I did mix composted soil with the red clay because obviously I'm not going to keep putting compost just for it. I want it to get used to the red clay too. But everywhere that I planted it, it had no issue. It was outside. It got full sun. And maybe that might, I'm not sure. I should have to look that up because I thought that was just a great thing since it seemed to like the full sun. Have a look real quick. Oh, it does like. It does best with 6 or more hours of direct sunlight. 8 to 10 is best. So it needs a lot of sun. It will thrive in hot parts of your yard, which mine did. So that makes a lot of sense. Here in this part. So I'm guessing up north, maybe that strain. Maybe it's gotten used to it up there, but when you plant it down here, I know it's definitely, it was hardier. Because it was one of the plants that I had put outside that I was like, well, you're going to have to tough it. I'm sorry. This is the only part of the yard that I have left. And, well, you're going to get it. And it was, it took off. It did so great. So
that's phenomenal. So we're talking about herbs and a lot of other various house plants. I'm curious, growing up or in your family, were there specific, any kind of specific, say like trees or anything that would be planted on the property to, for any various reasons? Because you hear about, especially, you know, in pagan communities, when you're talking about like in Druids, the Druid path, you know, they revere the different kind of trees, the oak, the maple, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. Okay. So when my grandfather bought my grandmother her house, he bought her an Althea tree. I seen somebody else, I think, mention Althea earlier. And it was supposed to be, I don't really know what their lifespan is, but I will tell you that it's been there since my grandmother married my grandfather, and it's still there today. So I thought that they had a 30-year lifespan, but I don't believe that. But my grandmother said that was a family tree, a generational tree or something to that effect. And it spread to two other parts of the yard and created two other different types of color flowers. So now we have a pink one, and then there's a white one that also has pink on it, but the original one is violet. So I always thought that was interesting because Altheas, when we use them, they have a lot of very heavy spiritual energy to them. So for them to be in the yard, I just thought that was so strange. It's still alive. It's still there. Very mystical type tree. But here we also have magnolias that grow everywhere, and magnolia trees are a big thing. Actually, my mother, when she passed away, she wanted to be cremated and planted, had a magnolia tree planted with her ashes, and she wanted it planted in the yard that, you know, from where she grew up. So that was something we did, and it's facing my mother and father's bedroom, that same magnolia tree. And that one, you know, magnolia trees are also meant for marriage fidelity, conjugal happiness, and it's a big one here in the South. There's a lot of magnolia trees, and a lot of them are very old. And so I think that people will have those in the yard when they really, when they're very happy in a marriage, they have the magnolia trees. But we also have a lot of the bay laurel trees too here. And I know that planting the bay laurel trees, they can be very protective. These are also another type of tree that you can have for protection. But it is a tree. The leaves can be used for success working, but the tree itself can be put there. It's kind of like a guardian tree. I think that Ismael Gashuba mentioned earlier, guardian bushes, and that's the same thing for the bay laurel tree. I seen a quote online, something about a tree outside can keep evil from entering your home. But there was also the holy oak and the oak tree. That's also another one that's meant for protection. The rowan tree was kind of an interesting one because it's supposed to ward off black magic, which I thought was a very interesting tree. I don't know what a rowan tree even looks like, but I just thought that was the most interesting thing to read. I've never seen one. But, yeah, these kind of trees. And then you have hibiscus, but it's not really hibiscus is kind of like a bush, but for me, it's more like a tree because they're so big. So, you have those. And those can be used in any kind of general love work. And to put spell remains from Lenny Loveworks into your hibiscus plant, too. A rowan tree wards off black magic.
It's R-O-W-A-N, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been actually thinking about the Rowan tree. Now that you mentioned it, I've seen pictures, but I don't think I've ever necessarily seen one myself. I wonder where they grow. Wonder what their zone is, because, well, you know, vested interest.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We all of us in the practitioner world probably have a vested interest in planting plants of that nature.
Yes. What is that called? A mountain ash tree. It looks like it does well in colder climates, so it has a hardiness anywhere in the north, so long as it grows in the zone shown in the color. So zone 3 to 6.
That is definitely.
Like.
You know what? I have seen these now that I've looked at a picture. I've seen the ones with the white berries.
Mm-hmm.
All down
sure
through central Pennsylvania. Oh, wow.
That would be nice if they grew here, too. Although, I'm sure we have a type. It's just I thought that was so strange. It specifically says it wards off black magic. So I've never had anything in my yard specifically that's meant, you know, for witches and black magic. But I know that there's got to be some things here in the South that are specific to that. It's just something I'm going to have to dig a little bit and do some research on. But,
well,
yeah.
You know,
in notation, because that was a new thing I learned.
Can you believe we're almost out of time? We have about 10 seconds left before the end music kicks in. This has been a fantastic, mm-hmm. fantastic episode. And Plant Magic Part 2 is always on the table, Miss L. If you would love to like to join us again, the door is always open. I really appreciate you joining us tonight. But that is all the time that we have. I hope everybody's enjoyed your time with us this evening, as always. Until next time we meet, let's keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, L. Duval of WorkingWithSpirits.com, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll welcome another outstanding guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystic Mages and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at folkconjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics Thursdays and Fridays from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from folkconjure.com in North Carolina. Mystic Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archives via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. From all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here, and be sure to follow at Mystic Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystic Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at this same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.